All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Yeah, good evening. We're back, myself and John. John Bowd's All the Rage. There was a time, probably about 3-4 years ago, that where we had a debate show here on Trax FM and the previous German station on New Front Radio. There was a time when we were so centre and everything, there was nothing really to talk about, poor Judge Jim. We had to dig around a bit, you know. Sometimes we'd go on in, there's nothing to talk about because everything was so centrist, you know. We were so captured in this bubble of, well, we're not telling you some things, but while we're discussing it, the planes are on the way to Syria to bomb it, but you're gonna lump it anyway. We didn't even have a referendum on it, you know. John, we're going to talk about Milkshake. I will be playing a track called Milkshake. And I did see a lot of absolute garbage on the attack. I use initial. We're talking about little Tommy, or Tommy, up in Manchester. I think he was in Liverpool. He had to be escorted out yesterday. Or was it the day before?
Oh, I love Liverpool.
Yeah, it's amazing about in social media. So what social media, some people... Not anti-fascist. I don't like that because that's a label. I hate that label. It makes them sound like someone with two heads. What someone did is did a map of where he would go and how he'd get there. So yeah, they tracked him to. I saw this map in Manchester and then Liverpool, but both cases. But I mentioned the Milkshake thing because initially, when it was reported. It made out, it was only 5 minutes, I've got to be honest, 5 minutes of fame where he was made out to be the victim. And then what happened, someone analysed the whole video, John, and when little Tommy approached this young lad, the young lad was surrounded automatically by, they reckoned, they counted about 8 to 10 Tommy Robinson supporters. And they literally surrounded this boy. The way they angled the camera or the phone, you didn't see it. Someone else filmed it from far away and said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And fair play, he knew these guys were surrounding him, but he's still done it. Because he spreads hate. John?
Yeah, and he's a cheesy little bully boy too, always with it. It's interesting how often he runs away too. He genuinely is a coward, like a typical bully. I find some of the response to that. Firstly, I no qualms in telling you this. My first response was I damn near pissed myself laughing when he got covered in Milkshake. And I just love the fact that we now have, you know, again, playing the victim. Little Tommy the Milkshake Martyr. You know, it's, I got covered. And I think someone said he was stepping up his security because of the attack. How exactly did you get attacked with McDonald's Milkshake?
He wasn't. He's going around and interviewing people. So he's actually... I think lad was protesting initially when Tommy, Mr. Robinson, or Yax Lennon, or whatever his name is, pulled up. And what he's got this microphone, and he's going around interviewing people. So the ones that I saw... Well, obviously, he interviewed his own supporters, which was all about grooming gangs and stuff. And then he decided to do... luckily, other people have watched him and filmed him. And so he approached this housewife who was pushing a pram. And she kept saying to him, what are you doing here? What is your motive for coming round here?
Yeah.
And she said, look, I don't want to talk to you because your motives are totally... You know, and she would, you know, she would just stopped, but they didn't advertise that. And it's great. It's great to see that. That was in Manchester. I think Liverpool, he didn't even have a chance to land. So
no, just for the sake of our listeners, just to let them know about one of the reasons why Liverpool is such an amazingly awesome city is there was a group. Oh, let me remember now. It's so long, I can't even remember now. I think it was it might have been the EDL or Britain First or the football Lads Alliance, whatever, who went there and didn't even get out of Lime Street Station. They basically anti-fascists surrounded the whole station, and they had a little bit of a demo on like platform one or something, then got back on the train and fucked off. So it was great.
It's the most cosmopolitan. The only thing they got in common there is that certainly in the 80s, I know in the 80s, The only thing they have in common, because it was all people trying to find work, whether you're black, right, white, whatever, was poverty. It was traditionally underfunded during the 80s. It was actually starved of any funding whatsoever. And they all got something in common there. As I said, all colours. Even if you watch Boys from the Black stuff, Ass Vida Saint Pet, Brookside even, it was probably more attuned to society than EastEnders. EastEnders I used to find funny, John, because the pub, everything centres around the Queen Vic, and in it was black and white, and I thought it was funny in East London. That just was not real. In Liverpool, however, that's different. It would be very accurate to say people of all cultures are in the melting pot there. They were probably, you know, their great grandfathers all probably worked together on the docks and stuff like that, you know. And yeah, it's awesome in regards to cosmopolitan. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I think, for especially for our outside of Britain listeners to understand, is that Liverpool is a very militant working class city. And it's always been very good on trade unions and solidarity and stuff like that. The thing is, that was part of why it became a target in the 80s for the Thatcher government and their attempts to destroy collective action and working class unity and working class culture. So it was absolutely in the sights. I mean, I don't believe any of it was an accident. And even Michael Heseltine, who's for some reason sometimes seen as a bit of a sort of moderate conservative. So, I mean, he might have been moderate compared to Maggie, but not really very moderate. You know, he was the one who talked about managed decline, if I remember rightly, and the idea that the city was basically going to go to shit and they were just going to go, well, this is the way it is, post-industrial. You know, these people won't do what they're told, so we can't do anything for them. So, yeah, I mean, it's well worth remembering that when you think about Liverpool, and that's even before you get into the hideous injustice of Hillsborough and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of many parts of the world that literally were extremely... it's hard to describe. If you've not been there, if you've not been there during that time, it'd be hard for me to describe. I remember visiting parts of Manchester in the 80s, and if you can imagine blocks of flats, huge blocks of flats all around you, just covered, no one living there. It's really weird. Our Coventry was the same. And then you couldn't walk around there after eight. I mean, people would, it was just a fact of life. You just don't walk around there. We have to go. That was the guy with us. We have to go now. And then you saw groups of individuals who've got nothing, absolutely nothing. It's really weird, you know. And I remember once in Manchester, because what happens with poverty, John, it breeds crime and, you know, instant money, and you're talking about selling drugs and stuff. And I remember we stopped at a chip shop in Manchester, and this kid with a big coat, he was a child, he must have been about eight, and he just calmly says, "Could you move along, mate, you know?" And I said, "Oh, is there a problem, mate?" And he opened his coat and he had a gun. I said, "Yeah, we'll move along." And he was only about eight, you know, and he was very calm, you know. I don't know what was going to go down or whatever, but then you go to some parts of the country at that time, you know, it's bars and lots of money and lots of restaurants and, oh, it's crazy. It's a little bit Los Angeles, isn't it, John? If you remember the film Boys in the Hood, you know, there's parts of Los Angeles that don't have any off licenses or gun shops, and you go to the poorest parts of that part of the world, and where all the killings and the murders and the poverty is, there's an off license or a gun shop on every corner. So,
yes, indeed,
that is crazy. That is crazy when you think about it.
It's almost like they're planning to get you to kind of wipe yourselves out.
Yeah, I mean, there was a scene in Boys in the Hood where the plan was for not to people to, you know, replicate, or the ability to have families and grow. There was a belief there amongst many civil rights in that area that there's a deliberate ploy for just to trim everything down and move it away, or marginalise it and let them kill each other. A little bit like Paris, where they moved all the poverty people, all the ability, all the working class people, to move around the outskirts of Paris them rioting inside Paris.
Yeah, it's very typical of it's nothing new. I think it's typical throughout the world. Definitely, it seems like a funny debate when you say the words out loud. But I've heard people say, you know, that town planning has a racist element to it. But that is so true in places like, as you said, Paris. Certainly, lots of parts of America where there was. I'm sorry, I can't actually remember it. But there was a particular term for. I think they called it redlining, actually. Back in, this is going back as far as the 50s, when basically white people in various parts of America's cities, like Los Angeles and that, were sort of persuaded to move out of certain areas, and within the areas that they lived in, they wouldn't sell to black people, wouldn't sell, real estate people, estate agents wouldn't sell to black families and stuff like that. Go, no, keep them within the red line, or something like that. I mean, it's,
yeah,
it needs more detail than what I'm giving it.
Yeah, yeah, that may be something we could look into, but I think... it's great. Certainly in America, there's been some great films and documentaries, up to the mid-70s when we had Roots here, and it was probably the most watched program in this country at that time.
Yeah.
I remember
nan watching that film, actually, that program.
Yeah, yeah. John, the country stopped to watch it.
Yeah.
It was... I was at school then. Every nationality watched it. And everything's been documented. I've mentioned Boys in the Hood, which is a classic that opened the world to Compton and that part of Los Angeles.
To be fair, mate, it opened to those of us who weren't into gangster rap. You, the likes of you and me already knew plenty about Compton, because we were clued up by then.
It wasn't because and rest in peace, John Singleton, who passed away, unfortunately. Yeah. What it did do is, apart from, it didn't glamorise violence, or, I mean, I found it, some of it, quite funny, but I think Lawrence Fishburne, who...
Domino, motherfuckers, what do you think about that?
it's actually quite sad, actually, when young black teenagers probably have a very high percentage of dying under 20, and then we realise what NWA were actually talking about after that
exactly.
film. In a weird way, actually, because Ice Cube had left NWA at that point. But in a weird way, it kind of, and I think it was a very low budget film, wasn't it? It was
If I remember rightly, it wasn't, and it was easily, I mean, no disrespect to the Departed, but it was definitely John Singleton's best film. I don't think he ever...
I don't think he's ever replicated that. I think they never got a major distribution deal, surprise, surprise. And it was initially filmed in a film festival, a little bit like Daniel Blake.
Yeah.
And it just took off from there. People were so impressed by it. I don't think America is particularly proud of that film, John.
Good question. That, I mean, there was a little bit of a subgenre in the 90s of hood films, if you like. And to be honest, in my experience, the only two that were really any good were Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society. And
Menace to Society is up there. Isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's definitely
and that's,
up
and that's one that's that really doesn't, you know, a lot of, I mean, within, you know, alternative culture circles, it's very praised. But if Boys in the Hood, I mean, you're right about that film, but at the same time, Singleton did get a Best Director nomination for that. Whereas at the same time, you know, Menace to Society is in those areas is really not talked about because it was far more brutal and a lot less hopeful, you know.
Yeah, I found Menace to Society very... I don't think those kids have any hope if they didn't... You know, there was no chance of them coming, getting out of their lifestyle situation. There are no opportunity. I felt there was no opportunity. So you wondered, day to day, whether they were going to live. A little bit like The Wire, which I will recommend. I caught onto it very late.
No, did I. I so recommend it.
It is... I thought it was very dramatised, but then when I spoke to people, that's a way of life. That's their way of life. That's their aspirations to sell drugs.
I find interesting is one of the characters in the later series, I think she was in series 5, the young lady with the big bonnet on her head, she was she got in trouble in real life. I'm sorry I can't remember her name offhand. I'm sure I can look it up on IMDb, but no one wants to hear me tap my computer. She got into some trouble, and they asked David Simon, who's the sort of co-creator of The Wire and many other very good TV programs like Trumé, and he had a brilliant response to it. I think I remember actually cutting and pasting this interview because I like so much of what he said. I think it was in The Guardian or someone like that. He said, well, the fact is there's two Americas. I live in one, she lives in the other. And he talks all about the, you know, the poverty, the inability to escape. You know, people like, oh, you know, she was in your television show, but then she's got busted for you know, being involved in drugs. And he's like, yeah, it's, you know, the TV show wasn't a magic bullet. It didn't make her rich. He's only had a small role. What did you think was going to happen? You know, you can't just abandon people, you know, in the middle of, you know, a TV show or a Hollywood film comes to town. You think suddenly everyone's social problems are solved. That's ridiculous. And it was a really good interview, actually. You know, it's worth looking up. But then David Simon's sharp as fuck anyway. He's a smart bloke, and he's given us, you know, The Wire. If nothing else, he deserves credit for that. But as I say, also he's good for your other programmes and writings in his basis.
Yeah, as I said, John, there is a lot of now documented brilliant films on the Afro-American situation. Not situation, it's a travesty, actually, but... Yeah. And they're documented. And I think they've been better received here. I think they've been better received in this country.
I think they were at the time, too.
Yeah, as I said, Roots was like 29 million watched it in this country, week in, week out. And it was amazing. We were captivated. We knew about it, but we would never seen it. And it was, actually, it was very weak, you know, that particular programme, although apparently people still want to watch it. But I watched a film called 12 Days a Slave, is it?
Yeah, 12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave. And I was actually so... I wouldn't watch it if you're kind of looking for a happy ending story. I'm not going to give the storyline away, but I was extremely depressed for a few hours afterwards, John.
Yeah.
I found it brutal. I found it, you know... let's put it this way, it's not Django.
No, it ain't, mate. I remember seeing that film. And actually, I know what you say about it being a certain sense of hopelessness, but actually I found the ending very moving. I thought there was a lot more hope in that. But I won't reveal it in case anyone's not seen the film.
Yeah, I would recommend it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, check it out. Steve McQueen's a good director, actually. Check out his film Hunger as well. But no, what I would say, I mean, it's interesting what you talk about with the hood genre, which, again, is kind of obscene that it became a genre, because I think it was trying to communicate certain messages of things that needed to be overcome, certain terrible social situations, and instead it just became a, oh, you know, can this has made a bit of money, can this studio wants a hood film now. And yet, it's so brilliantly encapsulates a lot of my feelings about the 1990s, and particularly the political situation, which you've kind of alluded to in what you said, which is utter hopelessness. You know, people don't, and I know we have troubles today, but at least it seems like people are admitting to an alternative. I find all of the 90s, and yes, this includes, you know, Bill Clinton and all these, you know, basically this conservative yuppie, as opposed to a conservative pre-yuppie in the case of Bush and Reagan, you know, who came in and just didn't change anything, and it all became about, it basically became what the Democrats are now, which is just a party of people who are struggling to actually stand up for working class people or even recognize they exist, and everything's a fucking points based system, and when you're like, no, we just want healthcare, you know, they didn't change anything positive. I'm sorry to say it's a very, very negative time to be alive in the 90s, and everyone was you know, everyone likes a good bit of detached irony for a laugh, you know, the kind of entertainment that you watch, but detached irony in those days was a defense mechanism. It's worse than ever.
Okay, we're gonna go to a break, and when we come back, more chat with myself and John. I'm talking about, well, pretty much everything.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the rage. On Trax FM. Trax FM. Trax
FM. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge.
Me and John were talking about Roots. I said I wasn't offended that, well, I watched it live, and he said my nan used to watch it. I'm not offended, John.
Good.
Me and John said that also earlier that we could go on for hours talking about rap films and rap music, because John is a massive fan. John, we're gonna. You got a little bit of background about Mr. You Know Who Lennon something or other. Go on, John.
Yeah, okay. Well, what I wanted to do to kind of go move on from this situation is... like any of these situations where someone like him gets you know, a proper pasting with a milkshake, I do feel, yeah, it's a good laugh, but then the other part of me just asks, how have we got here? You know, how is this open extremist roaming around the streets, threatening people, trying to get interest from people to vote for him in the European Parliament, all this sort of thing? Which, you know, potentially could be incredibly dangerous, folks, because there's a lot of little groups of mostly Islamophobic and other type of extremists. Because, you know, again, another reason why we should all stand up to Islamophobia, as we were talking about in the show the other week, is because, not just because it's the right thing and the just thing to do, whether it touches you personally or not, but because where one extremism leads, all the others follow. So if you're LGBT or Jewish or anything like that, you know, you want to stand against this because they'll come for you next. So, but anyway, how are we in the culture? It got me thinking when you mentioned this yesterday, Dave, because we were, just to let listeners know, we were kind of back and forthing a bit on text. And I wasn't quite sure what I was going to talk about this week. And then you mentioned Milkshake Martyr, and I thought, yeah, okay, we'll do that. it sparks off a little bit of thought in me about how we got to this moment and how, let's call it what it is, you know, how fascism is now existing within the cultural moment, and it just to not be setting off the alarms it should do. Now, there's a lot to say on this subject, and I don't think what I'm going to talk about this week will be the last and only time that we discuss it by any means. But, you know, there's just a few things that came across my mind which I'd like to throw out to the listeners. Brexit, the post-EU vote. Now, there's a lot to be said about this. I could fill shows with it, and I'm not necessarily, I haven't done so far, because for those of you outside of Britain might not know, it's a bit of an ever-moving feast. Everything seems to be changing so quickly that every time you write anything to broadcast about Brexit, it's kind of something else may have changed, whilst at the same time everything stays exactly the same. A funny piece of historic materialism there. But anyway, the thing that the vote did do, and I think it's fair to say this, is it opened up or lifted the rock, if you like, where many of the immigrant-hating, queer-bashing scumbags were dwelling. And they've actually seen this vote as a victory for their movement, or whatever passes for a movement, for their way of life, which is essentially an idea of intolerance, of take the country, take Europe back to something it never was in the first place. But in my mind palace, it exists as this holy, wonderful place. And the only reason it isn't that anymore is not because of, say, deindustrialization or the acts of very conservative, with a small or big C, governments. It's actually because of Johnny Foreigner and his friends down the street. When all the arguments are done, however, it was overwhelmingly a racist and xenophobic people were voting Leave. Now, that doesn't mean everyone who voted Leave is a racist and a xenophobe, but I think it's fair to say that every racist and xenophobe that voted Leave. They were the most prominent and mainstream arguments running through the whole of that campaign. I mean, it really was quite disgusting. You know, if you can throw your mind back, if you live around here since 2016, you know, tell me the difference between, you know, pictures of a supposed queue of refugees and being said Breaking Point, and, you know, National Front graffiti telling people to go home back in the 80s. Because I don't see it. It's the same shit, really. Anyway, it had a very detrimental effect on the everyday lives of many people. People who had committed the crime of being black or gay or foreign or whatever, committed the crime of being Muslim, that kind of thing. It had this terrible effect on their lives. In fact, interestingly, I was tuning in to check out some stuff Owen Jones had written recently on his Twitter page, and he talks about experiencing homophobic abuse in the street. And actually he said it took him till he got to the age of 30. He gets plenty of it online too, and he always got a little bit of that, but now he's actually getting abused in the street in a way that he's never done in 30 years of being here and happening to be gay. But anyway, moving on, I want to talk about Great Yarmouth, and some people may have caught on to this, but this is a pretty horrendous story that is very indicative of our world of opinion over fact and feelings over reality. We have put up with, some of you have put up with, a staggering amount of bullshit in the name of hate in this country. And the classic one would be the notion of no-go areas, thought to mostly be in London and concerning areas with large populations of either Jews or Muslims. This is a trope that some areas are ruled by Sharia law, or that non-Jewish people cannot walk in certain areas despite such rules being illegal and against, you know, there's no law that governs that you can do that. There is no amount of Sharia law in this country. That's ridiculous. There aren't areas where if you go with a can of Stella, you'll get banished. I mean, you should be banished for drinking that load of shit, but, you know, that aside, it's you're not going to get thrown out of an area because you're drinking alcohol or because you're a white boy. It doesn't work like that. It never has. But nevertheless, these stories persist. They run around online and people say, oh, yeah, this is a no-go area for people like me or whatever. And yet the fact that they've never been true, they still exist. And this is the part that troubles me. A few years ago, I remember going to a demo against an anti-Semite group who had claimed that the rest of us were not allowed in Golders Green or some such crap, among other things. And then the kind of usual, you know, Jews have too much influence over society, etc., etc. Now, however, we've got an even more dangerous one. Through the medium of Facebook, there have been hate rumours started that Romanians in the area of Great Yarmouth are stealing children. Why they would do this, where they are putting them, and why no one knows any children who have been kidnapped by Romanians or anyone else in Great Yarmouth has made no difference. It's still running around on the on Facebook posts, blah, 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 posts that say things like 49 Roma gypsies are stealing children. And remembering, of course, that Roma gypsies are one of the most marginalised and attacked groups in the world. Of course, many reposters are celebrating that we can finally send them all back after Brexit and all this sort of stuff. A BBC report spoke to some people in the town, including Romanians, who talked of being abused in the streets, and others who talked of possible vigilantes running around the town. So real-world results come from these kind of silly rumours. After investigating and finding zero evidence of any children being kidnapped by Romanians, I'm going to say that as many times as I possibly can, because it seems like we need to, the police are even trying to shut down the rumour mill, but to no avail. Now, this is a very good one, I think, if you'll pardon the term, that brings us to a situation where we discuss, you know, free speech and freedom of expression. Whoever is expressing themselves on Facebook that children are being kidnapped by Romanians in Great Yarmouth is expressing a deeply dangerous lie, which can only be motivated by their hatred and intolerance of this particular group of people. So where free speech comes into it, especially when, as we've said, there's now reports of possible vigilante action, which will hurt people a lot and is totally unjust. You know, where do we go with this now? Where is this notion of free speech and the absolute martyrdom that little bitches like Tommy Milkshake play on? You know, I don't really understand why we've allowed this to happen, except that we're just an incredibly weak nation of a piss-weak culture. Probably have something to do with it. There was a woman, this was awful, but it kind of made me laugh. There was a woman who was apparently married to a Romanian at one point. And she said that she believed these rumours, and therefore, never mind the children, we should just send all of this lot back. You know, they're all the same. And thanks to piss-weak questioning from the BBC, she got away with saying this and then claiming that she wasn't being discriminatory. No, I'm not discriminating against Romanians. I just want them all removed from the country. And I just thought, listen, love, we've all married arseholes before, but I really think your policy is going a tad far. It's just like, yeah, I understand your husband was a dick, but there's no reason to ship the whole lot of his fellow nationhoods back. Anyway. Well,
it's interesting, John, that the BBC allowed that to be broadcasted. And you mentioned a couple of shows ago the mainstream media's infatuation with far-right groups or far-right tendencies or even far-right comments. Mm. There's bad people everywhere. Do we just have to highlight one bad people? There's grooming gangs going on everywhere, and it's disgusting. I'm not saying it's right for certain groups, and it's going on everywhere. When I grew up, there was a pervert in every street.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because I remember us talking about that before, and I was rethinking about this, as I often do. I mean, firstly, just to kind of close this section off, is the Great Yarmouth story was so repulsive to me that I remember... thinking when I heard it, it's like, why don't you just add a bit about drinking children's blood while you're at it? You know, just really cap it off. Because if you actually do your research properly and look back at the, the build-up to what happened in Germany in the 30s and that, and then over the rest of Europe, this is how it starts. You know, it's this. In those days, there was sort of Nazis put out posters and stuff about the unworthiness of disabled people and things like that. You know, it's the same thing. But we don't teach this subject properly, but that's for another week, maybe. But yeah, I mean, again, why is this getting any ground? Why does this stuff get any ground? What is the state of this country and its culture where truth dies, where intellectualism and education is something to be suspicious of, and even factually inaccurate right-wing twits become free speech martyrs? It's a pitiful, weak culture, and I'm absolutely sick of it. But anyway, sorry, so to answer what you were asking me, Dave, which I've just completely forgotten because I was ranting on about that. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying that there's bad things happening everywhere. And what I'm saying in regards to, say, like the grooming gangs or people who steal burgle houses, they just centre on one ethnicity group, you know. When I grew up, they all wore, Beano said they wore a blindfold thing and a stripy shirt, you know. and then we'd say, well, that's a reason to actually get rid of everyone.
Yeah.
And then they put a mic in front of these people And as I said, I think people got something to say. I don't think we should stifle it, but I think we should have healthy debate, a respectful debate, and let one speak, and then say, well, here's the facts and figures on that, here's the facts and figures on that. And then we might come to some sort of common ground. I'm not saying that we all live in the land of milk and honey at all. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is the media need to start concentrating on deliberately putting someone in front of the TV. You know they're going to say something outrageous because someone's saying something that makes sense. Mm. They're never going to broadcast. John?
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, it's not even just the issue, it's the method. And the method is to kind of let people speak, or this person in the street, and never question them back. And the BBC are the worst ones for that. You know, it's, if you look at, like, satirists like Chris Morris on programmes like The Day to Day and Brass Eye back in, you know, many years ago, they got better vox pop interviews by taking the piss out of people than the BBC get by being serious. And this is the thing that bothers me, is that you give platform to this extremism without any thought of responsibility. And but again, you know, people say, and you know, again, we need to get out of the kind of fetishization of the concept of free speech, because if you live in a society where people are doing nothing but spreading vicious rumors and lies, plus no one's saying anything original, I don't give a shit about your free speech. And, you know, I know we've again, part of the fetishization is this idea of us fighting for the right for expression. Listen, if you're like some extremist Christian, for instance, I'm not just picking on them, just giving you an example because I've heard these people say this before. If you're some extremist Christian who thinks that paedophilia and homosexuality are the same thing, I'm not lifting a finger to get you a platform to speak. I don't give a shit about you or your fucked up opinions. I don't care. I'm not going to do anything to help you. Why would I? So and that's an honest response. I'm not doing this thing where, you know, free speech matters when people have something to say. And, you know, again, I think we discussed this before, but I haven't exactly got a problem with offensiveness in general. But purely on a personal level, this is nothing to do with the law, nothing to do with rules and norms of society and all that bollocks. I have a real personal problem with if you're going to be offensive for no good reason. If you've got a good reason for it, if you're, you know, fighting for your rights to be, say, recognized for your sexuality that you've previously been discriminated against for, or something like that, then fine, go ahead and be offensive, and it doesn't really matter how anyone feels about it. But, you know, just going on telly and telling someone to piss on their granny, is that's not clever. And I mean, do it if you want to, but I think it's a waste of time.
Oh, God. They do that because they'll get another 1,000 viewers. That's
yeah.
it. That's
yeah,
it.
It's clickbait.
But the BBC yeah. was not created for that. The BBC was a machine. It was I forgot. Do you know, as I get older, it was a machine after World War One, certainly after World War Two.
Propaganda.
That's it. Yeah. And it used to. That's all its job was. That's it. For some reason, it thinks it's Fox News, Sky News, CNN. HBO, and it's odd because they do broadcast social justice messages, the BBC, but they do it on comedy shows only. I've noticed
yeah.
that the comedy shows actually make much more sense than their current affairs shows.
Well, they often do, but it's interesting you say that because, again, there is a medium of art and culture, in this case comedy, where you can often say things that you couldn't say for some reason if you're a politician, even though politicians hold power and actually make decisions of how a country is run and how it's seen internationally. And that's something that I've always found quite frustrating, because when you, you know, people sort of go, oh, hey, you know, I mean, there's a bit of an attitude like this I've had in America for a long time of thinking that, you know, the liberals have got hold of the culture, and yeah, it triggers and winds up the right wingers because they're stupid. But, you know, I don't listen. Fuck the Daily Show. I'm not interested in it. It's crap. I want healthcare for everybody. Do you know what I mean? You have to. People are getting the wrong ideas, I think, of thinking, oh, but we've got this and we've got that. And I know, you know, the shit when I grew up, like you've already mentioned tonight, you know, we had our rap music, and we had Bill Hicks, and we had these people where we felt like this was a big alternative thing that we were tuned into and no one else was cool enough to understand. But so what the actual result of that now is that, as I say, the deeply disconnected 90s that we lived through has now come to the point where everything's absolutely in the crapper, and 1930s style demigods are coming back to say, I've got the answers. And of course, I haven't got the answers, but despair is very persuasive. So people are going, oh, yeah, we'll have a little bit of that. And yeah, everyone's going, I mean, you remember the other week, Dave, the local elections, everyone was doing backflips about the Lib Dems doing well. Because Lib Dems, piss off. You know, I mean, they're blood on their hands for the bedroom tax, among, you know, and other acts of austerity. They're a bunch of middle managers. No one wants to be run by them. It's just local elections. Aren't anyone bloody showed up, which they never do in local elections anyway.
Cheers, John. We'll be talking more after this.
John Bouts, all the rage, all the on Tracks FM, Tracks FM, Tracks FM.
Is it 94? Anyway, Desiree, but that's the remix of You Gotta Be. You're listening to John Bowes, All the Rage. I mentioned the BBC that does do social justice or social messages, but only through comedy. And I noticed when they broadcast this stuff, and the comedian has got an absolute full house. And he'll say something that makes sense about politicians, about Brexit, and all the things that... You know, are correct or socially correct, and everyone in the audience starts whooping and cheering. So it seems that they've got a special place. I think it's the majority that think like that, but I think the BBC got this special hall for people who agree with what's happening socially out there, but they must package them somewhere and then release them into this hall. But I think that, I don't believe that. I think the mainstream media tend to think that they're marginalised. They're not. And I think there is hope out there. I think we all think the same. I think there's a minority who think not the wrong things. They just don't know any better. Someone, a good friend of mine, put up a post about we should stop eating Cadbury's cream eggs because they're about to introduce only Shirai Cadbury's cream eggs. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. So I managed to get the statement from Cadbury's saying that, well, most of our chocolate is actually vegetarian, which does stem from haram or whatever. And chocolate's always been like that. Where did they get this? Ban, don't go to Tesco's and eat Cadbury's cream eggs because they're going to introduce Sharia law for Cadbury's cream eggs. What's that?
What are they going to do? They're going to behead the fucking cream egg if they find it in possession of a piece of bacon or something.
Who gave this person this information?
Oh, God, who gave him a fucking outlet to speak? That's the worst part about it. Listen, if you want to be ignorant and stupid, do it in your own living room. Shut the fuck up and rip bullshit on the rest of us.
You scroll past and you think, what does that? And then you go, what did I just see? You go back, you know, what?
You got to wonder, haven't you, sometimes, mate, whether what you're looking at is this person winding me up? Is this a joke? I'm not involved
in this. This person is older than me as well, John. This person's older than me.
Old people are stupid, can I tell you? Just quickly, though, on your thing, I will play on because there's a couple of bits I want to say before we go on. Some of what you've said there about the audience, I want to come back to that, but I'll come back to that in my conclusion tonight because I want to comment on people like that. As we were saying a little bit off the air, I think one of the things about culture and why culture matters, and when I say culture matters, it's not the same culture actually covers a bigger ground than that, so I should say artistic expression or that kind of thing, is that you can be more subversive, you can tell stories. And in fact, speaking of subversive, last week I finally caught up with the film Sorry to Bother You, which I really recommend because it has quite a conventional story, but it is told in a manner that's oh so very, very unconventional. I really recommend it. It's a very interesting film. That kind of thing. And I think in the world of comedy, it's it's one of those places where you can definitely do that. The problem is, people tend to not realise you have to take it beyond that. Now, if you're inspired by something, if you're inspired by a musician or something, if you're inspired by The Clash or whatever back in the day, you were supposed to, or The Ruts or that, you were supposed to go out and fight racism and fascism. You know, get back at it. That's the point. Not just listen to the records. Consumer politics is bullshit. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't have a result. But as I say, I'll kind of tidy that up a little bit more at the end. I just wanted to say something about, because we talked about Owen Jones, and it reminded me of something that I think is probably relevant to much of tonight's show, which is, you know, fascism in the cultural moment and how it's able to gain a foothold. See, we are rambling, folks, but we do have a plan for this evening. We do what we're doing. And Mr. Jones had written an article about the Home Office on the 18th of April last month and the cruelty and incompetence of it in particular and why he thinks it should be scrapped. Some of the examples he used, I think, are well worth mentioning here because they are very telling about, as I say, the way people are viewed, the way people are treated, the way we behave and understand each other. He talked about an 85-year-old with Alzheimer's who has lived and paid taxes and national insurance in Britain for half a century, and most of his extended family, as well as grandchildren and great-grandchildren, are British citizens who were born here. The Home Office is currently attempting to deport him to India for some reason. There was a fella, Alfred Jan, who's about 40, who was woken up one morning by police kicking his door in, who were looking for an Albanian. I think he qualified, but I'm not sure he'd actually done anything. They got the wrong address, it turns out. And he got an apology after them, after he had to chase this apology for ages. And there was a lady named Paige from Enfield who attempted suicide when her Albanian fiancé's visa was rejected in 2017 after she submitted all the documents proving that she met the income threshold and for him to stay here, or he met the income threshold. That income threshold is 18,600 apparently, or so just over 18 grand. Her fiancé was hospitalised at least 15 times because of the stress. Paige lost her job because of the stress that was running through her, and it turned out that what had happened is that the Home Office had mislaid a payslip. What Home Office are doing recently, as we speak, is building a migrant database with the intention of denying access to essential public services, which the organisation Liberty has correctly described as a deeply sinister activity. Refugees are currently deported to dangerous parts of the world that they've run away from after committing minor violations, and many of them have been killed. Hundreds of children who claimed refugee status upon arrival here are deported upon turning 18. And this includes to countries like Afghanistan and Iraq that the British government deems too dangerous for people to even visit. This is a kind of thing that makes hideous rumours like the Great Yarmouth example from earlier possible, as it did in the 1930s, and as Owen is right to point out, that the Home Office has always been a really shitty authoritarian institution anyway, even under New Labour types like John Reid and David Blunkett, who talked about refugees swamping schools and all of this crap. However, that is nothing compared to the Tories' record of scapegoating, let's not forget, scapegoating migrants in particular, for all of the ills of society, and this is actually a central plank of their political strategy, always has been, really. The Home Office is a blunt instrument that they have used since coming back into government to put all of this extremism into practice. It's very indicative of the present Prime Minister, Theresa May, when she had the role of Home Secretary. She showed, as Owen writes in his article, the only consistency in her wretched political career, and that was hating migrants and refugees. She introduced the hostile environment and all that followed, including stripping many people of their rights. As Owen puts it, she's proved willing to subordinate the most basic human rights to a fixation with removing and deterring the immigrants and migrants and refugees. One of the results is people who have lived and worked in Britain legally for decades were kicked out in the street, denied urgent medical attention, and sometimes deported. Those that have been compensated have received a pitiful amount, and they've had to jump through hoops just to get that. Liberty has documented terrible injustices, such as the impossibility of victims of serious violence, including sexual assault, to report these crimes because the police routinely hand undocumented migrants to the Home Office. Children born in Britain are being charged £1,000 to register for British citizenship, around two-thirds of which is straight-up profit just for the Home Office. Children's school records are used to obtain their parents' addresses for immigration enforcement. Children are denied free school meals and their parents, basically to kind of check out on their due to their parents' immigration status. Appeals are obsessively brought against rulings that allow refugees and migrants to stay, even though the Home Office loses nearly three-quarters of these claims. And then afterwards, they drag these vulnerable people through very stressful processes. Recently, the appeals court condemned the Home Office for its legally flawed misuse of terrorism-related sections of immigration law. It's a good job none of this is happening in Venezuela, is it? Because then we'd be screaming about what a terrible government it was. No, it's happening right here in Britain, and it is repeated violations of people's rights. And again, I come back to one of my main points. Why does all this terrible stuff exist? Well, because the Home Office were ramping up violations against foreigners and refugees and asylum seekers and all of that. Everybody else did nothing, and it never really made any major splashes on the news in the way that it should have, because of the culture in this country, which is a culture of being vile and spiteful, and is one based on hating people from outside of here. Basically, nobody fucking cares, and this is unforgivable. Now, hats off to Channel 4 News, who have done regular reports from places like Yarlswood Detention Centre, undercover from inside. But again, we need to understand, folks, and that having honesty and truth and decency on your side, you're not living in a Hollywood film here. It doesn't matter. The truth doesn't matter anymore. People believe the shit they want to believe. And it doesn't matter how ranked up to levels of violence it gets. I mean, another element that popped up the other week I'm going to talk about is the what became known as the Corbyn target episode. which was when a video was released of British soldiers in Afghanistan using a picture of the Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn as target practice. Not condemned by anyone I'm aware of in government, by the way. Many of the usual defenders of the armed forces crawled out again to either dismiss or mildly condemn this and make some pathetic comments about the honour of the uniform. We still haven't been given their names nor told which disciplinary action has been taken against them by the force for doing this, because the force doesn't like to discipline their people, we know that. Really, they should tell us who these bastards really are and how they are. They and the far right are ingrained into the British military in many ways. As we all know, it's from various actions over the years. It's only a few years ago that the press, I think it was the Times, reported an unnamed senior officer claiming that if Corbyn became Prime Minister, they might consider a coup. This is then added to by the Tories getting ruffled when Theresa May sat down to talk about the Brexit debacle with Corbyn. And we had the usual shrills shouting about that Corbyn hated Britain. I've seen that headline somewhere before, actually, as well. And that he is a Marxist, like this is a bad thing. It was even claimed in the Houses of Parliament, using parliamentary privilege, that he was an anti-Semite and dangerous to this country and blah, 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 blah. Almost like they are shitting it because he's getting close to power, really. And all this kind of talk is not only factually inaccurate, it can be dangerous. When Theresa May recently started discussions with Labour about her broken Brexit plan, many Tories and their supporters went nuts and screamed about the Marxism, but also used the popular term of traitors or treachery. And I remind listeners that that is a term that was used by Thomas Murr as he stabbed Labour MP Joe Cox to death. And he's not the only example of it in recent times. This is what happens in a culture that gets caught in retroactivity and looks to the past, any past, no matter how unreal, for some kind of sustenance. This is a dead culture of people disconnected from collective action, immersed in extreme individualism and extremism, and unable to imagine any future. So refuge in the past becomes required, and this is the sort of thing that nationalism and other exclusionary ideas, thrive on. That's why one of the reasons why we're in the moment. It's all tied together, in my opinion. I'm not going to spell it out on a chalkboard because I'm not Glenn Beck, but I think you get what I'm saying. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, sorry, John.
Well, I've only got 4 minutes left.
No, we're looking about cross. You know, I tend to look at things in it. So what I do on my Facebook thing, I play a lot of Bhangra videos, you know, when they're. So I did one recently when a group of Punjabi guys was sitting by the pool and they just put on Punjabi music and everyone started dancing because it's quite a happy, yeah. You know. These are the things people don't see, you know. And it's all different people dancing by the pool, and I put a joke, how to take over the swimming pool, you know, and it's great and the music's great. And also Paul Chowdhury, the Asian comedian from Edgeware, He puts mouth overs to obviously Prince Harry, and he pretends to be a Punjabi, but he's Prince Harry. it's quite funny, you know. And it, no one gets offended, and I think the majority of us find it funny. And you know, I just think they just portray this thing, and then people believe what they see. And in reality, it's not like that at all. It isn't really. No one's trying to eat your kids or take your job. Really, they're not. They're not. They're just like you. In the main, they're just like you. Just like the crack on. Enjoy time. Enjoy music. Enjoy a drink or enjoy reading. And all the stuff that we all do, you know. It's just bizarre. I don't know where this hate stuff come from, John. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many places where it could have done, but it's, I mean, one of the things that always strikes me about the, when people come up with these ideas, they really seem to believe, especially if they think they're happening just around the corner, is why don't you do anything about, if you really believe that, how are you able to, if you think kids are being kidnapped by Romanians in Great Yarmouth, how are you able to sleep? If you honestly believe any of that stuff, how are you able to function properly without just going mad? I mean, and you know, if you know it's the weekend, say it's Saturday night or whatever, why don't you jump in the car and drive up to Great Yarmouth and patrol the streets and protect little white people? You know, why don't you go and do that? No, you go down the pub and you go, oh, isn't it terrible what's happening to this country? No, I'm sorry, I don't believe there's a complete disconnect there. You can't honestly believe that if your response to it, I mean, unless you're just an absolute coward. But I can't believe that your response just kind of go, well, it's terrible, it's happening anyway. Do you want another pint? How you can... anyway, listen, we need to get to the conclusion, mate, because I'm going to run into your time again. So I'll just... Okay, mate, I'll just knock this out quickly. Anyway, so in conclusion to a lot of what we've talked about tonight, although not all of it, because we've had some nice angles, what...
Sorry, John, sorry.
No, you go ahead. It's good that you bait me off mic so no one else can hear it. So it's just, I like that. No one's got a clue that I'm being...
No, he's lying, listeners. I don't say anything. I'm really well behaved.
You won't believe what I've just told me. anyway, the biggest problem remains the same, as it always is. It's a lack of any real action by people. We need to tell ourselves some important truths. Basically, for those of you who think that it's enough to not be racist or homophobic or to whoop loudly when a comedian says something that's right on, you're wrong. It's not good enough. Not using the N-word or not making crass jokes about anal achieves absolutely nothing, because this isn't about you. It's not about you as being a good person at heart, because a good person at heart doesn't mean anything unless you actually do something. We need some action. And more importantly, we need collective action. Collective attacks require collective responses. This is about unity, not individuals who think that they can solve problems by making themselves feel good. So there's no amount of yoga is going to tackle fascism. Okay, we need to get on with it. Being honest and right is not good enough. This does not work, and the truth does not defeat anything. That is a blatantly false notion. As I said, you know, this ain't Forrest Gump. This is the real world. So we know who all of our enemies are. They're the ones that are covered in milkshake on a good day. But what about our comrades? Well, there's things you can do, actions you can do. For starters, the EU elections are coming up. Now, I would recommend voting in the European elections for no other reason than the supporters of Farage and the supporters of Tommy Milkshake are definitely going to vote. So you need to defeat them. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I mean, you should vote Labour, but I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm just telling you, if you want to make sure that you do not get these levels of extremists who will push, and certainly if you're somebody who's concerned about Brexit and the direction it's going in, then you have to vote. Okay? There's no, and sadly, I can't compel people to say go and register to vote now because that ran out last night. We're one day late for that. But if you've got your voting card, you've got your poll card, you've got all that, please go and vote. Form Antifa groups, combat these people in the street, combat them online, all over. There's always something people can do, you know. And I understand some people say they don't want to, you know, they find it difficult to go out in the street against people like that. I understand, they're scary people, okay, and no one looks down on you for that. But there's plenty of other stuff you can do, you know. If you're good at writing reports, if you're good at looking at the stuff they're doing online and putting that out for people to use, you know, in their arguments, do that. You know, we always need people to help do that. It's a very important job. You know, there's no hierarchy of worth in the left. The proper left. There's no hierarchy in Antifa groups. We're all there for the same goal. Plus, we need to push to abolish the Home Office. I think Owen Jones's article is completely right. It could be broken up with domestic policing, separated from immigration and asylum, so you don't have these terrible rights abuses that we talked about earlier. A new body that respects human rights rather than subordinating them to an ideology that's hostile to migrants would be good. And combine this with the debate on the combating of institutionalized racism and xenophobia. Liberty's Gracie Bradley wrote that, as long as society thinks Muslims, migrants, and black young people are a problem, it doesn't matter what the department is called. Very good point. How can we combat this and how can we change things? The media is against us, social media is a cesspit, and people are willfully ignorant of truth and facts and like to believe a load of shit that makes them feel comfortable. I have no idea how to break through to that, but hopefully some of the rest of you do. If you do, contact us. Tell us people we should check out, things we should talk about here on All the Rage. But we need to combat this stuff. But one thing I will just in closing say, everything from hitting a fascist with a milkshake or a bat is not something you need to feel guilty for, because these people are there to... Their actions and their words lead to destruction and even death. So, you know, you're not under some moral imperative to be nice, to make middle-class people feel comfortable when you're fighting fascism. This is a fight to the death, and I am as serious as can be about that. We need to get out there. But if you've got any ideas how to, you know, get people's brains turned in the right direction, love to hear them. Dave, thanks again for letting me run over.
All the Rage, John Bowd.
www.traxfm.org.